Blog Talk Radio.
Like a single river, like a single grain of sand.
Another, shall we? This one is called The Queen. I have named you Queen. There are taller ones than you. Taller. There are purer ones than you. Purer. There are lovelier ones than you. Lovelier. But you are the queen. When you go through the streets, no one recognizes you. No one sees your crystal crown. No one looks at the carpet of red gold that you tread as you pass. The non-existent carpet. And when you appear, all the rivers sound in my body. Bells shake the sky. Like a hymn fills the world. Only you and I. Only you and I, my love. Listen to it. And so that is a couple pieces of verse. By Pablo Neruda. This comes from a collection called The Captain's Verses. Love poems. Alright, and we're being joined by Daniel Michael today. How are we doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. As you can tell, I was here setting up the studios at Cafe Fairfax, probably since about 6 o'clock this morning, getting it ready for Zariana Radio.
Yes, yes, and we are, you know, well prepared as always. Speaking of which, I did not get to sleep until about 4 last night.
Me too.
So I think we were doing surprisingly well, considering.
I wasn't really misbehaving that bad. I had one of those Trader Joe's dark beers.
Which one was it? What was it, Dan?
The big
Vintage Reserve.
Vintage Reserve, dark and spicy and lovely.
What are you drinking now?
This is coffee.
Good choice, good choice. I'm going with the mate right now. I think this helps clear my throat a little bit better than coffee does when I, especially for, these morning shows where you gotta, you know, get up and then immediately have your storytelling voice. You know, I think anyone who does vocals of any sort will testify to you as well, Dan. It really helps to warm up the vocal cords a little bit before you're going into something like this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one guy I know who's an opera singer who also, I think, teaches a little bit of voice lessons on the side, he says he brings with him at all times, he has a little pieces of either chocolate or grapes.
Chocolate, really?
Mm-hmm. And he says he chews on them. And I think either one will work, but probably dark.
Yeah.
But, and he says you'll chew on them and it gets, you know, everything going and it gets all the, you know, juices going in your throat and is, because what you don't want, the enemy is drying out. You know, that's the enemy is to your voice, is that your voice getting dry.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
That's when it really starts to feel tired and all those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know. All right. We all have a good excuse to carry around little bits of chocolate with us all the time.
Right.
All right. So I've got... Well, we've got these pieces by Pablo Neruda. We may or may not get in and read a couple more. Kind of just on the fly. I haven't read this collection before. I've read like one or two of them, maybe. But you know, we'll just kind of see what we get there, and there's not a disappointing piece in there, I can assure you.
I have a good idea. Why don't we put in just a very quick song while we make a transition?
All right. We can do that, too.
We'll catch our breath, make a quick transition over to the other side of Cafe Fairfax Studios, and we'll come right back. And Evan.
Yes, Dan.
Interspace Shuffle or Spungled Spores?
Play Spungled Spores.
Here it comes, Spungled Spores. Thank you. everybody. We're back. This is Daniel Michael. We are having a few technical issues here. And right now I'd like to make a few announcements. One of them is that Janice and I are going to start working on some new projects to promote the network. And that could be doing sort of some independent reporting, because we have a studio here, Cafe Fairfax, and we're talking about, you know, using it to put together some really good demos to market Main Street Universe and everything we're about to other networks outside of Blog Talk Radio as well. But we'll still continue to do Blog Talk Radio, of course. But we're going to shop it around, knock on some doors, do some special reports and things like that. And I'd like to remind everybody that we have, in fact, four shows, one of them being the flagship show every Wednesday, 11 a.m., Main Street Universe, with me and hostess Janice. Thursday, 11 a.m., Zariana Radio with Evan Pass. Friday at 6 p.m., Walking on the Sidewalk, a Horizon Oracle's Journey, with host Kevin Baird, and midnight, Fridays, technically Saturday, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse Ann Nichols George, who was on her book tour for her book Activating Compassion, and the Activating Compassion Workbook is the companion to that. So those are the four shows, as well as, like I said, we're planning on expanding and doing other things with the Main Street Universe Network, even outside of Blog Talk Radio, including public access radio and television, and shopping the show around to different networks, or shopping some independent sort of reporting to different networks. So we got all kinds of things going on. There's other projects we're working on, festivals, and other things that I can't get into yet until they start to form, until the seed starts to sprout and grow
and germinate.
And right now the server is not being found by my computer. I don't know why. I usually get good signal out here with this computer. But every time I try to find Blog Talk Radio, it's not connecting to my studio page. So if you're there, and if you're on the phone, the song finished, and I have a backup computer in the house that has the show on.
You know what, Dan, if we get the signal back in here, we can go back to that. But
yep.
I think we might take some callers later, but we're going to do some storytelling right now. And for everyone in the chat room, we love y'all. We can't look at it right now, but we're happy you're here with us. All right, so last week, for the first time in since like my second episode doing Zariana Radio, I chose to read some original material, and it was very fun. I enjoyed it a lot, and enjoyed it so much, in fact, that I said I'm going to do it again this week. We've got a different story. Another one that is in every way possible still a work in progress. However, you know, in a way, I even like each phase of it, because every time I go back and edit it and like reconceptualize the story, it ends up like changing in some subtle way, sometimes not so subtle, that, you know, really changes the sometimes a sentence can make the story. So when you're changing everything around her, at least that's how I feel about it. I'm always ending up with a different product, and it's always got its own character to it. So this is, I suppose, this one of those phases. Still not sure what direction it's going to end up going in the end. I feel like this certainly is, you know, part of the larger work. Just the beginning or some excerpt. And this is probably about a year and a half, 2 years old, I would think, at this point. Even though, like I said, it has been getting a lot of revision along the way. So, I think we're just going to get right on into this here. Before we do, there's something I'd like to explain about this story, or about, rather, a single word in this story that has to do... I get the impression this is somewhat important to the Zara mythos as a whole, and this is a story... like all my stories probably are, that falls within the Zara mythos, of which we have spoken before. The word is mist, but that would be spelled M-Y-S-T instead of M-I-S-T. Now, you know, there's... Okay. I'm going to hand it over to Dan real quick and get right back into the story.
Okay. We do have one caller, and we'll take it, and then we'll go on to Evan's story.
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Yes.
Are you doing reading?
We can do one very, very quick one.
Well, the purpose of me calling is, yes, you know, my husband, I left him, like, in September. And we had a vehicle together, and he knew that I was going to, you know, keep the vehicle so it wouldn't go on my credit and catch up on it. So it was coming close time for me to, you know, get some money and catch up on it and, you know, pay the notes. And so I think that he did it out of spite. He called the people and told them where the vehicle was, and they picked it up. So now it's going to affect my credit. So I'm just wondering, what do you see happening, you know, in the whole process of, you know, the vehicle? I don't think I want it anymore, but I'm just wondering, I know that the process is them auctioning it off, so I'm just wondering, do you see them auctioning it off, and do you see me holding a large balance? Because if it's not a large balance, you know, I'll go ahead and pay it off when I get some money, but if not, then I have to just pay on it gradually.
See, here's the thing. This is what I was thinking about as you were saying this. The tarot is a, you could say, a divination system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would say it's for fortune telling. The first tarot decks came around in the late 1300s.
Okay.
Or that's the first ones, the first tarot deck that we have record of. I think they found it in Italy or something like that. Dan's grabbing his cards right now. He'll be right back in the studio with us. We didn't have him in there. Now, some people would say, and this has often been said by many occultists and experts in the art of tarot, that the proper use of the cards is not for divination at all, but for contemplation and for meditation. That, in fact, although it might be possible to use these cards in, you know, for the purpose of divining matters of the mundane world, you know, matters of little consequence compared to the great spiritual insights that these cards possess.
Okay.
Because of that, they say that the highest purpose is to contemplate them and to meditate upon them, because those insights are far, far, far more valuable than anything we could possibly ascertain through the use of this sacred tarot, for trivial, you know, and mundane purposes. Perhaps they can't answer this. I can only offer my opinion on that, and I would say yes, they, you know, these cards can answer such inquiries.
Well, but
at what cost? Is it worth profaning these cards, you know, for questions that we really should be able to answer for ourselves? Because what you're telling me, it sounds, you know, like a serious matter. You know, this sounds like something important. And, you know, there's nothing in these cards that they'll be able to tell you that you, you know, probably can't figure out for yourself just by, you know, looking at the situation rationally and logically and, you know, figuring out for yourself.
And with that being said, and Evan has a very philosophical view on the cards.
Very pragmatic, I would think, too.
What I'm getting from this is definitely it's showing the bad economic things happening, working with others, but it's also saying it's time to stop setting up things that will fail, like little sandcastles and or ice sculptures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's saying that it's time to start building something new and to start looking internally, as Evan said, like this is a card called the Rituals card, and it's doing internal rituals to start looking internally and figuring out who you are working with, because everything in this reading is about not working well with others or not choosing people well to work with. So it's kind of like becoming strong within yourself and choosing, you know, better, kinder, more responsible folks in the future to partner with and to start new things with in your life. And the final, yeah, and it's walking away from obsessions. So it's kind of just, it's not bad, it's just a warning and an advice saying to, you know, gather your own inner strengths together and to start, find some good people to start working with. And there could be some success. I see somebody might bring you some good news, but it's kind of giving me this, you need to sort of to start getting out there with a new circle of folks or an old circle of people that you know you already trust and not with people that aren't any good for you.
Well, then, you know.
And I would also, real quick, I'd like to qualify this all and, you know, this reading and all readings by saying that in any card in tarot, because every card is a microcosm or oracle, you can extract any meaning. Any meaning from any card is possible. Two different people will see two different things when they look at the same card. And for every person, you know, that's unique. Oftentimes we see what we're looking for. Or sometimes not. But beyond that, especially when you're not reading the cards for yourself, but you're having cards read for you. This is a reader's interpretation, yes. And I suppose there's certain things that, you know, that this could be useful for. But you always have to remember, the tarot reader decides what the tarot reader says. If you want to know some, if you really want to know whatever it is that you're calling to get a tarot reading about, you have to figure that out for yourself. It upsets me when, you know, people are taking serious life issues like this and just like casting it out and calling in to, yes, a show that offers free tarot readings. I mean, if you put your mind to this, you can figure this situation out. I'm not going to go off on that any longer. Please keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm, no problem.
All right, and thank you very much for joining us on Zariana Radio. Good luck, caller. As we were saying before, there's this term mist. There's mist with an I, which we are all familiar with, is the water vapor, condensation in the air, or not quite, what's almost on the verge of condensation, or would become so when you walk through it. It clouds the vision. You can't see through it. A blanket of mist. So what is it, mist with a Y? Well, it comes from the root, same root as mystery, mysticism. What is mysticism? Really close friend of mine asked that question one time. As a supposed one mystic to another. It's a very romanticized concept. But what is mysticism? Well, mysticism is not seeing something clearly for what it is. It mystifies us because we don't understand it. We are mystified because we lack comprehension. Because we cannot conceive, because we cannot see it in its entirety. It is too vast and we are too small. So it mystifies us. Our minds are blown. We fall into ecstasy and reverie. We babble. We go mad with joy, but mad nonetheless. That's mysticism. It's because we cannot see it in its entirety. Even the best possible glimpse, the closest, the most revealed, still is only seen through so many veils. I don't think any human has ever pulled back the last veil, and I'm not sure that such a thing is ever possible or will ever happen, whatever that means. And it really can only be done in theory. So, we get this quote by Ashtika the Prophet. It's like a koan of sorts, or the equivalent in the Zariana tradition. It goes, mist is the mist of consciousness. Mist is the mist of consciousness. No, it isn't going to stay in this location, but I currently have this quote at the top of this story, you know, in the beginning. And it's only there so I don't forget it. But it's all I also put it there because I use mist in a sense once or twice. It's actually used in both cases, or both forms of mist. I just want that to be clear because it makes it only slightly less metaphorical than it would otherwise be. That is having a why. And so let's fall into this story here. The working title is Two Minds Full. Two Minds Full. Mist is the mist of consciousness. Wise are the waves of water and wind as they cast the lots of plankton and pollen, sifting chum from the chosen, observing them crashing upon the surface of my skin, retreating seamlessly into the ether, as gentle breezes do. I found myself at an intersection between dreams, a beam of golden light flashes through a veil of cobwebs, and I followed those streaming photons to the source. Sun, that ancient star flower, sprouted from Kumba's waters on this dawn, as it has on billions of dawns past, unfurling golden light fronds upon the shores of our humble domicile, blooming like a golden kaleidoscope through my open window. I cracked my eyelids, quickly snapped them shut. Bless the weaver of sense and syntax, medicinal light floods through stagnant channels, filling the crying void within every lustful pore. An awakening, a cellular consciousness that will surely infuse the rest of the day with the conviction that life is still worth living, a conviction I sorely needed. The silky fog of sleep I sailed through had no intention of lifting when they arrived at my door that morning. In high spirits, I gathered from the tone of the voices disturbing my blanket of mist. The village elders have stories about the origins of the robots. They never struck me as plausible or even consistent. And to tell the truth, they were somewhat less than captivating, even to our innocent and unyoked imaginations. how do you tell the elders they're telling the story wrong? One day, I started crafting my own stories to explain the enigma of the robots. We play in the ruins of lost civilizations. We know almost nothing of the people who created these ghost cities, setting them adrift into the future for time's children to scavenge and play upon. I pick up a skull, minus a mandible, staring up out of the carpet moss, thousands of years old. Just so, within me, there is a skull just the same. Yes, the skull that I am reflects, toss. God, I love that girl. We crawl into the giant's eye socket, rimmed with a frame that appears to have held a convex lens, perhaps 3 meters in diameter and 30 centimeters thick. Presumably, the optical interface of the technological Goliath. Why they chose to make them anthropomorphic is beyond me, but they always do. I guess it's in our nature to create in our own image, to forge technological microcosms of the human macrocosm. Here, we are war. Is it other than art? Do we have a choice in the matter to create humanity's technological reflection in which war has barely won his place? Or are we invisibly compelled by forces perhaps hastily labeled evolutionary, but functionally similar, to follow a script we know nothing of, and yet are writing with every breath, with every flick of the wrist? Perhaps it brings us some small degree of comfort to cast a human face, however abstract, on a device so truly alien to the reality of the creators who wrested it from the void and gave it life. The interior was entirely overgrown with moss and lichen. Fungi. Scuttling arthropods suckle dew and stimulating nectars from natural wells of leaf and flower. Device of war concedes to become a device of ecosystem. It would appear the golem has grown more refined than the master, at least in matters of life, death, and courtesy. Sat upon the socket's mossy lip, gazing out that eye, so very much older than our own, kicking our unshod feet through the open air. To say, the more I don't say anything. Perhaps it is only that I prefer to polish my words before they leave my lips. And most of what I'm prepared to say isn't worth its polish. So I toss them back, unspoken. Perhaps one of these days, time will polish a handful, and I might have something to say. At least, that is what I tell myself. Two minds full. And nothing to say, she says. She smiles and confounds all cognitive activity for the remainder of the afternoon. Emptinesses, we sit, lost in worlds of our own design. Earth spins on her axis. And sun spits his golden light against the advancing clouds. But I am not amused. Why were they created? What function did the robot serve to this lost civilization? The interiors had been stripped long ago for their valuable circuitry and anything else of significance had long been looted, leaving only the frames, the metallic ceramic exoskeletons designed, perhaps, to protect the delicate cybernetic organs in battle, perhaps to endure the vacuum of space during interstellar travel. Perhaps out of sheer novelty and extravagance. It began to rain. They were going back. I told them I was going to stay and walk home later. I don't particularly enjoy solitude. No one does, really. I demand why. But I know not to expect answers from such ignorant and pretentious inquiries. What difference does it make why? Many things that were meant to be never were. You can spend your days, your sleepless nights, interrogating the crude and witless entities that dwell in the caverns and crevices of the psyche, protesting the injustices committed against your humanity, or humanity, or whatever, at the hands of a neglectful, a historically vengeful parental unit whose unfathomable ways are undeniably beyond cognition's ability to circumscribe, whose notorious existence will eternally remain elusive to circumstance. To an audience of sloth and slug too dense to rest their serpentine spirits from gravity's elementary compulsion, caught in the tides of a greater will, hiding like eels in the reef, they only tell you what they think you want to hear, spouting stupid answers to your stupid questions. And who else is there to stop you? The Thunder Twins had come. And just in time, too. It was too quiet. And I bubbled over in mirth to hear the sky shriek and moan, reveling in the fluttering rents slashed through Zara's wave pattern tapestry of light and sound. In awe of powers I could not comprehend, and the creatures possessed of them. I cheered for the upstarts. Let the earth feel as I feel. Let her flood under waters of undimmed dreams, burn in the fire of unsprung desires. I found I had allies. And it was no minor revelation. I was alone, I'd assumed, and hastily it seems, never considering the sky gods who walk with me in every step, smiling upon this degenerate primate from celestial cities. falling over themselves in ecstasy as I oil and polish the lingam they gave me to worship them by, sipping neurological nectar as it overflows this wellspring of creation, as it overflows this humble fountainhead. I want to destroy. How else shall I speak it? I want the world to feel me, and she will. In time, I will emerge from this shell and look upon this planet as Autark, the self-ruler. And they will know me from kingdoms of old, and the wellsprings will overflow in their abundance as once it was in time. My grandmother told us the robots fought with the cephalopods when Kumba's hordes marched from the ocean to attack the humans in their attempt to conquer the land and drag it back beneath the sea. She always ended that story with a pleasant bedtime reminder that it was only a matter of time before Lord Kumba reorganized his armies to launch another assault, even greater than the previous siege, now that she has tested the line and knows exactly how much tension it will take to break us. And so, dear little ones, you must never leave your beds at night. For tonight may be the night the cephalopods rise from the waves, as they have once before, and surely any wandering children will be snatched right up and gobbled like sweet human dumplings, torn limb from limb by dripping suction-grip tentacles and bone-hooked beaks to suck the marrow from your wee little bones. Sweet dreams, Kindla. Sweet dreams. I waited out the rain, daydreaming, idly. When it stopped, some hours later, I awoke. I was not dreaming in the traditional sense, nor was I asleep, but the sensation was unmistakable, of waking from a night of vivid dreaming. With deft fingers, I massaged the tension from my jaw and temples. Thirsty, I knelt to sip the rainfall from a cluster of hanging pitcher plants. The mist began to lift. The earth was fat with saturation, glistening with the fallen sky diamonds the cloud so generously shower upon the land in exchange for humanity's meager offerings of blood and smoke. I left the shelter of technology's skull and began wandering aimlessly, tracing paths through the vegetation that had risen up to conquer the time-lapsed robots. For its photosynthetic progeny. Guided by the only angel who would yet condescend to interface with me. That most insatiable and compelling of the mind-born nymphs, curiosity. She took my hand in hers, so warm and flushed with unrealized possibilities, and we danced long into the night, through the garden of towering artifact. And there you have it, folks. Two minds full. And can we please, please, please get a round of applause out there for Mr. Daniel Michael on the drums. Woo-hoo! Give it up, folks.
Everybody in the studio clapped.
Give it up.
Isn't that amazing?
Give it up. Woo!
Somebody was here and said hi. Our chat room wasn't on. I told you we were having computer issues outside in the studio here. And I saw that IMD visited. It's someone that I've seen in your chat room before for Zariana Radio. So, and they did a waving hi. So forgive me if I'm not responding well to the chat room because we were having issues losing signal out here, which occasionally happens. Usually this computer holds pretty good out here. But every once in a while, with certain weather conditions, wherever, you know, wherever it affects it, even though it's pretty clear out here for us today, but it was a little gray, and sometimes that happens. I don't know. We're dealing with wireless into landline. So.
And also, some, you know, for our callers and chat roomers out there, you know, there are times like just now when I am going to need to steal Dan away and put him on the drums.
Yeah.
Put him on the drums.
So I'm not always.
Be offended if we're not responding every 2 seconds. You know, we do got to do our show after all. and you know, I really do like the chat room presence, but you know, we can't always be completely present for that. And I'm, as I said before, never present for that because I'm barely present as it is.
That's right. We're just light and shadow and all that, and little energy particles that are moving around. So we are where we are. And mostly made up of empty space.
About 99.9999 repeat empty space, in fact. Mm-hmm. There's this case going on forever. There's not really all these electrons that make me up.
Yeah, the distance between the, because you have the three parts, the proton, the neutron, and the electron spinning around it. And the greatest distance is the space between the three particles.
Right. This is a show hosted by two energy fields for the most part. Two walking, talking.
Combined with various, like, you know.
Very weird energy fields.
And, fluids and solid, you know, plasma mass blob stuff going on, too.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of plasma blobs. That's basically what I am.
All right, well, yeah, that was an interesting story. And it ends with he finds an ally, I guess, is what I was getting from that, to help him take on the...
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, he was ascending to... Because there's lots of questions about creators and the created, you know, going on there.
Yeah.
And that's what I got from it. He's trying to see, can I sort of touch that and be that being the role of the creator, you know, towards the end, saying, you know, they'll tell stories of me, da-da-da-da-da, and I'll ascend to be that. And then he finds what you said, like the nymph angel thing to sort of some force to aid him in his...
And who... See, this is why I really like talking about these stories, because for any story, two different people are going to understand it two different ways. They might even agree on the same words and the same descriptions, but they're not imagining the same story in their head. They're still talking about two different stories, and every story that every different person hears is a different story.
Sort of like what you said with the
story takes place in the mind. You know, every time, even if it's like the same signal, you know, and I consider stories to be, you know, just elaborate signals, essentially, that we pass from, you know, center to center, or antenna to antenna, receiver to receiver, that we all are. Every time it interacts with a new consciousness, it becomes a different story. You know, and you could even argue about whether there actually is an existence of, like, the, you know, the pure signal itself. Well, we don't know any pure signals. We only can know our interpretations of those signals. Now, I find this especially interesting with my own stuff because it's a little bit easier for two people to sit there and talk about something that a third party has written. But when it's something that you've written yourself, there's always this like level of curiosity. And that's actually the nymph who he encounters in the end of the story, about what other people are imagining your story to be. I mean, honestly, like, I have no clue how this sort of thing comes off. Like, I can't imagine, like, you know, if I was to say, like, what was the plot of this story? Or, like, what happened? What's the story actually about? You know, I have some degree of opinion on that as far as, like, you know, my intention in writing it. But I feel like most people who I share this with would understand some, you know, see something different in what I wrote than I do myself. Or understand, like, a certain part of it to be central to it, different from what I understand that to be.
At some point.
So... This is why it's really fun for me. I really enjoy, and it, you know, I'm always just really curious. Like, well, what do people hear in this story? So, any of our listeners want to give us a call or you have hit us up on the chat room? That would be more than welcome. Curious what all y'all think out there. Certainly enough hours have gone into this writing and mostly rewriting. But so Dan, what do you think about this? What, as far as like what stood out to you, or I mean, you were speaking a little bit about creator and creation, and I can assure you that that is something that is, you know, usually at the front of my mind when I'm writing anything related to Zarianna. Because I suppose you could say it's part of the theology of it.
My idea of it was there was lots of themes about questioning the very existence of what you are, like as a creator and the created, and almost like, you know, what are the responsibilities of both? A little bit I maybe got from that. And questioning the nature of existence itself and how real is something that is created. For example, you know, there's the, you know, the android-like being, if you want, for lack of a better word, with the exoskeleton and all that that you mentioned. And is that any less real? And again, it was created in the image of the creators, which goes back to really basic religious themes.
So, yeah, it's like God created man in his own image, and we're creating artificial beings in our own image.
We seem to always want to project that. Oh, well, if we make an artificial life form, we'll make it look just like us.
Right? Like, from the very beginning, like, every time we thought of robots, we made them human-looking robots.
Whatever.
The earliest cartoons, even before we had robots, the Jetsons, you know? Like,
they were somewhat human. You know, they were human-like, that, you know, usually with arms and a head and...
But we would have made them better if we could.
Yeah, like, that would be considered, and it still is, in robotics, considered to be the ultimate robot, almost, in a dream sense, that, and in a real sense, that if you make that one that moves just like a human, which scientists are still working on. We actually did a show on that on Main Street Universe one time of advanced robotics, and they have ones now where, like, the arms are just, you know, they're moving just like, you know, human arms are, and the eyes are moving around and reacting and blinking, and it's that's always considered almost the standard. That's considered, okay, you're way up here if you're making one that looks and moves like a human, because the human movement is so complex. And some would say the human design is highly flawed, but either way, it's not easy to mimic, you know, to have people move or to have machines move about just in the way that humans would react. Like, if you get near it, because, you know, they're making one with all kinds of sensors, and when you get near, they're kind of like this and that and looking at you like this, and, you know.
Well, I just want to say I love the human form. I don't, you know, I mean, some people may find flaws with it, but I'm going to have to strongly disagree with that sentiment.
Sure.
I think there's a reason why, you know, why the cosmic soup spit us out like this, so to speak. It's perfect. Like, you know, I think there's also a reason why human beings have evolved very little physically for so long, while we've evolved so far mentally and spiritually. Because I think we have hit on a, you know, really solid form.
A good design
that's built to last. And now we're evolving in higher and more subtle realms.
Oh.
Right. And those, you're not talking about feather wings here or like leather wings either. We're talking about spiritual wings.
I was talking about real wings.
Yeah?
Chicken wings. I'm hungry. Okay.
All right.
Anyway,
stay in Buffalo Wings.
Anyway, I'm going to hand the microphone back to you if we got another story coming up. This is about, I think, 15 minutes. No other readers for you to be mean to?
Nope. Nope. Forgive me. Forgive me.
We were having technical problems. We're irritable.
All right. And for the final story, and I actually won't be doing the show next week because I will be out of town.
I will be, though, out of town, too.
Dan Wolf will be out of town next week, but he will be doing a show. We're going to go back to a piece that was, I think, the very first thing I read on this show. I want to return to it because I probably had, like, several times less listeners than I do now, and it's probably been a little bit revised, touched up here and there, but I can't really recall exactly what I would have done to it. But every time I look at a story, I end up tweaking it at least just a little bit. I'm always finding little mistakes here and there, things that could be worded just a little bit better. And I believe the working title for this one is called Perfection. Listen. It is told that their names are identical, up to the last syllable and a half, because they are identical down to the last segment of programming sequence, by which Kumba Kwari is known as the waters below, and Kumba Kwanta known as the waters above. The estuary at their convergence has been called life by those who are incapable of accepting the existence of a thing for which there is no word, ineffable, though it may ultimately be, this confounded storyteller being no exception. And surely I am worse than most, for what is the essence of my craft but the raising of linguistic pyramids? Out of finely hewn blocks of the ineffable. Life, as we reason, contains Kumba Kwari and Kumba Kwanta both in more or less equal measure. They are as pots, or rather, pots within pots. Attempt not to separate the vessel from its contents, but do wonder upon its transparent mystery, for the truth remains balanced in harmonic equipoise for all to behold, for all those possessed of that rare grace which spurs us to uproot the karmic compulsion to strangle that which we do not understand and therefore cannot tolerate, ideas so they may be. Gaze and be fulfilled, that which fills the pots that thaumaturges of ages not yet come have pronounced Kumba Kwari and Kumba Kwanta. That draught which we drink from them so deeply with every breath, with every heartbeat, that is called ki. Light, consciousness, nectar. And that is all and everything. On an island that is to Kumba Kwanta what our humble coconut palm island is to Kumba Kwari, under a palm frond canopy not so very different from the lazy cabana beneath which we sleep and eat, make our crafts and keep our rituals, make love and entertain death, only macrocosmically more so. Under just such a canopy, there lives a young girl named Zara. And she is a potter. That is, she makes pots. Pots within pots. Pots within pots within pots. Pots all the way down, you might even say. And this is what she does. in the very deepest, and therefore very smallest pot. She lets fall a single drop of blood. And she corks them up all the way up, and on the convergence of the three sisters, hurls the pots within pots into the greater ocean. And as the scent of blood brings the flood of subtle life energies to colonize the pots within pots, so a reality is born. A reality, a consciousness, a soul, an eye to be through, another eye to see through. Cast into the sea of energy to catalyze the fermentation process. And so, for now, they float and bob and drift away into the elsewhere. Wherefore, does a girl craft pots only to toss them into the sea? Whereof, on an island of coconut palms, do they acquire the hardwood necessary to feed a furnace capable of firing so many such clay pots? Wherever, for that matter, is clay to be found on a small tropical island? Such are the questions of the wise. But let us be contented to acknowledge that we congregated here and now are not to be counted among their lofty ranks, nor ever shall we be. So please forgive me if I let such wise questions lie. Here a fool speaks before a congregation of fools. Do you doubt it? And, therefore, let us indulge for a moment in the pursuit of foolishness. Can Zara craft a pot so small it cannot be filled with a single drop of blood without overflowing? Can Zara stack her pots so far down a single drop of blood dropped into their mouths will never strike the bottom? Or so deep that the sound of the drop hitting the bottom will never again reach the top? Can Zara shape a pot with a curvature so pronounced that the eternities contained within its earthen walls bend in upon themselves like serpents devouring their own tails, so that a drop of blood splashes against the bottom before ever it fell through the top? These are the questions I would ask if one there were to address such inquiries. But for you, my dear listeners, for now, I'm afraid I have no such answers. Can you accept it? Each pot the young girl creates is, so they say, a masterpiece, as perfect as a goddess can wish to be. after so many cycles of perfect pots within pots, however, she eventually came to grow bored of her effortless perfections and decided to make a pot that was somewhat less than perfect. And so she did. And she felt a wicked delight over her miscreation. It was bad, and she knew it. And she loved it. And she made another. And another. And another. And she stacked her flawed pot down, all the way down. And she placed a single drop of blood in the very deepest and therefore very smallest pot. And she corked it up, all the way up, and she hurled it as far from herself as she possibly could, for she hates it so. And Zara realized then that she loves it too. For where there is hate, love is often to be found nearby, lurking, perhaps, in the shadows, broken and injured. But underneath it all, love, just the same. She realizes this, and she despairs. But she is so far and lost it.